Where and when were you born?
I was born in Waltham Abbey. And you were asking me for the where? Number 34, Roundham Road, Waltham Abbey. You got it? And that was on the 22nd of October, 1921.
And what did your parents do?
Father was, at that time, a journalist.
Was he working on a local paper?
I don't know.
What sort of area was that? What sort of area was it that you lived in?
It would be, quite a reasonable area. I can't remember it because we left shortly after.
Where did you go?
From Roundham Road. Well, I was only a baby, so I don't really know. I can't remember.
What are your early recollections? What are your early recollections?
My early recollections of when we left, must have left Roundham Road in Waltham Abbey and lived in an old black timber tarred house that was left over from the Fire of London. And I can remember that because I was about four when we left there.
And where did you go then?
To the foothills of the Black Mountains, border of Wales.
And is that where you went to school?
I did start school there, yes.
How did you get on there?
I can't remember. It was a bit tough for me. It was Walterstone Common, the little school there that catered for the locality. Yes, that's right.
Did you get on all right with the Welsh people?
I love the Welsh people.
Good.
Yeah.
And what were you good at school?
Nothing much.
Sport?
Swimming.
Did you enjoy team games?
Not particularly.
And what was your dad doing then? Was your dad still a journalist?
My father and mother were on the point of break up then.
So did you go with your mum to live?
Yes, we were a family, remember. About seven or eight.
So your mum took all the children?
Yes.
And where did you go?
Well, this was where we were at the time, on Boldstone Common in Herefordshire, mm-hmm. A foothill of the Black Mountains.
So life was pretty hard then, for her?
Very hard, yes. And we were short of things. We couldn't pay our way, and as far as I can make out, we couldn't pay our way, and we did go. We had to wait for the next meal on times, but I won't say we were totally starved.
So do you have happy memories of your childhood?
Me?
Yes.
Yes, lots. Lots. Had a lovely mother and a lovely family.
Good. So when you left your primary school, where did you go then?
To another mountain location, Thornhill, just outside Cardiff, between Cardiff and Caerphilly.
And was that a mixed school or...?
It would be a boys' school and a girls' school, you know, that was the thing in those days.
And what are your memories of that school?
Not much. Had to go, didn't like going to school at all anyway, so it was a case of being picked up by a little bus that trudged over the mountains and taken to school and brought back.
Were you at school with your brothers and sisters, a similar age group?
Most of the time, no, because of the age gaps.
They were older than you, were they?
Yes.
So, had your dad been in the First World War?
No.
So, what age did you leave school?
Did my father?
No, you.
I left school when I was 15. I passed the scholarships and went to high school in Cardiff. And at 15, I decided that, in my own pig-headed way, that I would be better off to leave school early, or at the earliest possible date, and go out to work, which turned out to be a silly mistake.
So where did you find employment?
Employment was found for me in steelworks, in a foundry.
What were you doing?
I was apprenticed to steel construction.
Did you enjoy that?
Not particularly. I was good at it, but I didn't enjoy it because I didn't like the my environment. Noisy, rattly, dirty, and didn't like it. I just didn't like it. It wasn't my thing.
How long were you there?
Ah, good question, because I stayed there until I was 17, and at 17, my late elder brother came home and said, I've joined the Sherwood Foresters. I've joined up. This was in 1938. And he came home then, later, and in a lovely blue uniform, walking out uniform, and I thought, gloves and all the rest of it, and I thought, oh, that'll suit me nicely. And so I started howling then, can I join the army? And found out I could, when I was 17 years and 3 months, I could join as a supplementary reserve, do 6 months training, and then go back for a further training once a year as a territorial. And the idea of that was that it would break the apprenticeship, because they couldn't stop me from joining the army, but if I wanted to break the apprenticeship of my own accord, we would have to pay £40, which of course was non-existent. And that's what happened. I joined the army.
So
at 17.
At that time, obviously Hitler had come to power. As a young lad, were you aware of what was going on in Germany?
Not really, no. I'm more interested in keeping my bicycle going and chugging around and eyeing the girls up.
So, you said you went in for 6 months training for the territory.
Yes.
What did that consist of? Where did you go?
That went. I arrived at Higher Barracks, Exeter, to join the Devonshire Regiment Infantry, January the 6th. 1939.
And what sort of training did you do there?
Funny enough, it was a lot of it, the great bulk of it for a time was as for the First World War training.
What did that consist of?
Well, a First World War type of training, with the static warfare type of trench warfare type of environment envisaged. You even trained in it and went, taken out to the common and all that sort of thing. Yeah, but later on then came in the brand new an innovation that was the brain gun, and then they took the I think that was the last time putties were worn in 1939, and
you wore putties up to the knee, Tom.
Yes,
did you?
Yes, when I first joined. That's what I say. It was all First World War, all ready for mud and go and get shot.
That's very interesting. What sort of guns did you train
on? Excellent training, in actual fact, and I don't regret any of it, because they were tough, they were rude, they were. But for instance, there was a Sergeant Nightingale, and his voice, he could have probably sung like a nightingale, but his voice would carry about 10 miles, and he put enough venom in it to make you go. But they were lovely fellows.
And you were in a barrack?
Yes.
With how many others?
Oh, in a barrack room with about 20-odd others, because there were different barrack rooms, different platoons.
What platoon were you in?
Neve.
And did you find the army life acceptable, or was it? Had you any regrets of joining up?
Oh, well, I think I found it quite okay after the time when I'd just been knocked into shape a bit. I can't... at that point, you literally were knocked into shape, particularly in those days. There were no frills attached to things. And that would be it. And it didn't hurt me at all.
So what
it did me a lot of good.
What would a typical day consist of? What time is we rallying?
Oh, there was a timetable in those days, and I suppose it would be now, but it'd be more varied today, I suppose. Well, the usual things, reveille and parading and drills and various weapons, training and so on. I can't think about the moment. It seemed to go like lightning.
What was the food like?
Well, friendly, it was okay. It was all right.
What sort of things did they have?
I can't remember. It was edible.
Did you get any home leave at all?
Yes, well, I went home at Easter, and I begged and borrowed a suit of blues so that I could go home looking all like my brother. And I managed to find someone, my lad, who bought one, and I don't know, I gave him 10 bob for them, I think. Anyway, I bought them, and I used them all the time then for walking out instead of the old car key.
Was that acceptable to the young ladies in the area, did they?
Oh, yes, it felt quite acceptable, yes.
So did you meet anybody in particular at that
time?
No,
nothing in particular, just like little flies in the night. Well, not in the night, but, you know, there was... No, I was just a young fella and nothing very harmful about me.
So in the evenings, were you allowed out of camp to go to the
barracks? Oh, out
of
the barracks, yes. Yes. You had to be in by... I think it might have been 9:30, 10 o'clock or whatever, and maybe on a Saturday a little bit later. Time enough to go out if you'd just been paid and go and get a fish and chip notch up somewhere.
How much did you used to get to pay?
Well, I drew... The total pay was 14 shillings a week, which would be about... On today's reckoning, I don't think... Can you work it out, 14 shillings a week? 70 pence? Yeah, it's about 70 pence. So I sent my mother home an allowance out of that, of half a crown. And then you had to have a compulsory something. I drew about 6 or 7 shillings. Yes.
So did you make some good friends there? Did you
yes.
have a gang
yes.
that used to go around together?
Yes.
Oh! So you made some good friends there?
Yes.
Did you get into trouble?
No.
Your kit inspection was always...
Well, usual things. Turned out to be quite a good shot. I think some of the young ones, they were in this platoon, there were a number of us supplementary reserves. We were only 17, but a dozen of us joined up for various reasons.
So, did you stick together as a supplementary?
Well, not particularly, no.
What were your officers like?
Well, there was only... I hardly ever saw them. They were only greens, what I call greenies, that came out of Sandhurst and, you know... The NCOs that were the mainstay. RSM and NCOs, the officers, they were... Until the war started itself, officers didn't seem to be about. They were probably poodling around up in the mess, or else they were off on jaunt somewhere. I don't know. I couldn't identify one.
Was there a lot of drill practice and marching?
Oh, yes. Very strict and very good, too.
What sort of light infantry pace did you...?
That would be the ordinary infantry pace, yes. As opposed to the Cornwall ones and the Somersets.
And did you have to go on route marches? And
yes.
And where did you go?
Can't remember. It's too far for me.
You said you were good at rifle.
Yes.
Shooting. What sort of range did you fire on? What distances?
At all distances, because the eyesight was extremely good. Still isn't bad. And there was a rifle range, or a shooting range, near Honiton at the time. I don't know what's there now. Probably houses.
And did you take part in any competitions for represent your unit?
No.
So how long did your actual basic training take? till you passed
6 out? 6 months.
And then you passed out?
Just finished, because at the end of 6 months, went up to the stores, got our civvy clothes again, that's the Supplementary Reserve Boys, and we went, what we thought very cheerfully, was into Civvy Street. That was the biggest joke of the century, because that was in July.
And 1939.
And I always remember one of the storemen in this store saying, "Get out." He started to give some of the old soldiers stuff, you see, and then and we said, "Oh, well, we're not soldiers now. Get out, you'll be back again in 5 minutes." "Now, you wait and see." And I remembered that, because we were. Anyway, so July till September, I was working, getting good money, plenty of work around, went home.
What were you doing, working?
Labouring. Mm-hmm. Nothing else at the time. I hadn't got any bright ideas, and my mother didn't try to sway me one way or the other, because he already had a disastrous apprenticeship. And I realised now that she wanted me to get my feet. And of course I got my feet, because the next thing is mobilisation, and in your pay book, after we were demobilised in 39, in 7 weeks I was mobilised again, and took the travel warrant out of my pay book, and off I went, back down to Exeter. Big joke. So there were all the little crowd of supplementary reserves turned up at Higher Barracks, along with all the old lags and bags of reservists and or whoever didn't want to be there, but it was full of everybody. And we didn't know what we were doing. Nobody knew anything. They were too busy building new barrack rooms and, you know, temporary barrack rooms, and filling up the parade squares with, you know, temporary buildings. And then on September the 6th or 7th, after the declaration, we were marched down to the central station. We didn't know what for. Take your kit and get onto the train. Landed up at Southampton and boarded a cross-channel packet, packed out with squaddies, for Cherbourg.
Do you remember which boat you were on?
No. I was sick as a dog.
And what had they told you about where you were going and what was happening?
Nothing. Nothing that I recollect. We knew we were going to France. I wouldn't mind that, because my older brother was already there with the Sherwood Foresters, you see, and they were reputedly in serving either in or near the Maginot Line, which was the thing in at those days, and I thought we probably would land up there, but we didn't. Because this crowd that I was with, they were literally a labour unit going out to, it transpired, out north of Saint-Nazaire in Brittany, in some forest area. And I suppose as the lorries brought stuff off the boats, the ammunition, that we were stacking it and moving it into these woods further and storing it around the area. For distribution. That was the job we were on there. And then,
what sort of information were you getting about what was happening on the war as a whole?
Nothing. The only thing is, you see, now this is where the army missed it. I'd had a pretty reasonable education. I'd been taught school French, but it was a good pounding of that I'd had, and I was okay at it. And it was the only subject that I did anything with, and I couldn't think of it. And so when we went there, I always remember, while we were waiting, there were people coming in from wherever, talking to the sergeants and you know, anybody looking after the place, you know, supposed to be anybody with a bit of rank. And the only thing I did know, that there were such things as fifth columnists. It's rather funny, that. And these lot were I understood basically what they were talking because they were French, but I would say that some weren't even totally French. But anyway, they were talking, and I also remember saying to the old Sarge, who seemed an old fella to me, "Sarge, don't tell them anything. You know who they are," and you know, young fella, and he did. He shut up, and they shoved off, and that's the only thing I can say about knowing anything from outside. And then later on, there came in the papers. There came, I can't remember whether it was headlines or anyway, it came out. The question was in the French was, why are the British sending their babies over to fight our wars? And it's only because that's a little. For those days, 17 in those days wasn't like 17 today, where people are grown up, they're nearly granddads. They literally were, I suppose, like in the First World War, babyish. Anyway, so the outcome of that was eventually that we were returned to UK before Dunkirk. Well before Dunkirk. I was a bit sorry because I wanted to get up to see my brother. I wouldn't have minded if I'd been alongside him. And that was that.
So you returned to the UK, what sort of time was that then?
Came back before Christmas. And wasn't my mother glad.
So where did you go then?
Joined a territorial unit again in Exeter. And then from Exeter to Exmouth. And then there was things were moving on, and the next move was from Exmouth, still in the Devonshire Regiment, then transferred to the northeast of England, Hartlepool, and a different regiment into the artillery then, Coastal Artillery, Hartlepool. Serving on, or training and serving on the old guns that had been installed, I think even from the First World War, because Hartlepool had taken some sea bombardment at that time, so I suppose they were lucky, they had coastal guns ready, or unlucky. And then later, after a time from there...
Can I, before you move on, what were your duties? Were you in a gun crew?
Yes, gun crews.
And what size guns were they?
6-inch naval guns, land mounted, along with 12 pounders rather, small guns mounted in emplacements.
And how many were in a crew on each gun?
Can't remember.
And were you billeted into?
Yes, right. The whole battery there was. That's where we were billeted. It was all the civilian houses within a perimeter, if you like, of the battery were taken over, and that's where we were housed.
And so, did you have to stand to like different times of the day, or was it mostly in the?
No,
night?
It was a regular routine on all the coastal artillery work that I can remember. Was done on a basis of you've got number of gun teams, number one gun, number two, or usually one or two guns of the bigger variety on one of these batteries, and there was always a team on standby to take post immediately, so there was always one team morning and night on duty, so that it was a rota system. So that's how it went.
Was it cold?
Cold? Yes. Sure was, but especially when you get one blowing off the North Sea straight into the gun emplacement. Oh dear. Yes, because they're always on. Always at night. There's always
Right. So you said you just telling me that you became a Lance Bombardier.
Well, yeah.
How did that come about?
I don't know. Just got promoted. I thought it was wonderful.
What extra responsibilities did you have?
Well, I don't really know. I don't know. Can't remember.
So how long were you there? Did you come under fire at all from?
No, not in that unit. No, they were never under fire. Not while I was there, because I was transferred from there.
When was that?
During following, this would be at the tag end of 1940, I should imagine.
And where did you go then?
To Sulcombe, in South Devon.
What unit were you attached to?
361 Coastal Battery, Bald Head.
And what sort of gun emplacements do they have there?
Similar arrangement.
Did you say Bulkhead?
No, it started.
Bolthead.
Bolthead.
Sorry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There was originally there were 4.7 Japanese guns there, 4.7 in emplacements, and then after a time they decided that they weren't adequate. You see, so. They had some naval guns, 6-inch naval guns delivered, however I don't know, but some job. The whole battery, literally with the local builders making the holding bases, they were installed. We installed them ourselves, the 6-inch gun. So it had the 4.7s were defunct. I don't know what happened with those. And then the 6-inch ones were put up. And they were in the open. They weren't in emplacements. And
how many guns were there?
Only the two.
So there was two crew, two guns, two crews. And where were you billeted?
So at the Bolthead Hotel. That's where we were billeted.
So we had to rough it then. Hmm? So you were roughing it then.
There was a scrubby. Well, it was a wooden. I don't know whether it is now. It's a lovely place, really. It's a lovely location. Didn't appreciate any of it. Gorgeous location. Do you know it?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. Well, do you know Firwood Cottage down below Bolthead?
No, I don't think so.
Well, down below, if you were looking from the hotel and you're looking down across the estuary, well, down below. You would have Firwood Cottage, which in those days had been taken over, of course, and all the area alongside the coast was included in it. So that battery had its gun emplacements originally, its war shelter where we used to, there were always duty people, was part of something to do with the cottage. That is a bit vague, but that was called the war shelter. It was taken over and just old bunks and the usual old thing and. That was used, but it had a veranda of some sorts, and once again a gorgeous view. And then there were tracks down to Splat Cove. Gone down there many a time. Boat, we had a boat too. Oh, lovely time. And it was the night duty, of course, would be on the guns and black of the ace of spades, but always had to be, you know, somebody had to be on the guns on lookout, even if we were in the war shelter. It's just behind, waiting, you know, if there was an alarm. That was the general trend of things there.
So Plymouth Blitz, they were badly bombed. Did you get affected by the
no.
fighters for Plymouth?
No.
Could you see it in the distance?
Oh, yes, but not enough to be bothered. The only thing that the experience that was anything sort of meant anywhere near a type of action would be the times when Focke-Wulf 190s came across low flying, went up the estuary and dropped a couple of bombs on Sulcombe and one or two other places, and dropped one trying to knock out somebody's fancy yacht. Valder, the name of that one was, and. That's all I can remember of that side. That was a little bit, call it exciting for the time, and go into Sulcombe and have a look at the rubble afterwards. But that didn't seem, that was just a hit and run. And then the other one would be later when you get stand to's for e-boat stuff coming in close, and you know, that's why that would be a case of standing to, that's all. But never fired a shot in anger. And then from there, I went from Salcombe on to Brixham.
The Brixham Battery?
Brixham Battery, yes. Battery Gardens.
And were you still with 361 Coastal Battery then?
Well, I was a sergeant by that time, as I was the number, that sort of big chief, number one on the guns. And I forget how long we were there. But it was during the time when the Focke-Wulf 190s were coming across that the Torbay was screaming out they got no anti-aircraft defence, you see, and why and all the rest of it.
Can you remember what when this was, date-wise?
Got me there. This is coming on to about 1942, I should think. I think I'm correct. And
what were your duties as being number one on the gun crew?
Well, just number one, just in charge of gun team, that's all. And then there came...
What sort of guns did they have there?
At Brixham, 4.7s. Japanese guns.